thank you, really. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today and for the invitation. A couple of things. I'd like to just make a quick introduction. The head of my elections division is also joining me today. Gail Fisher is up here in front. Gail, would you stand, please? And Michelle Parker, who is also with my elections division in the back. Thank you for that warm welcome. They actually make our election division they do all the work that makes that division look good and when it's turning at election, the crunch time. I really appreciate, once again, the opportunity to visit with you today. It's a little bit of an interesting and kind of surreal experience for me to get the chance to be here, but I want to tell you a little story. My chief deputy is normally a very reasonable, sane, nice person. And a few years ago, she completely out of the blue developed this incredible crush on Bono from the rock band U2. And mainly it was because of his lobbying efforts for AIDS medication. So recently I happened to hear that he was going to be in New York, and so I was teasing her and I was saying, I bet you wish that you could be out there where he's having lunch and just sort of happen to drop in and show up there. And her response surprised me a little bit. She said, because I thought it was going to be, oh, I'm headed to the airport. But that's not what she said. Instead, what she said was, no, if we were going to do ultimate wishes here, it would be that he thought my work was interesting enough that he would call me and ask me to go to lunch. Well, you know, my being here today is kind of like that ultimate wish come true. You guys are my hope and my rock stars. Hovav, you're my Springsteen. David Wagner is my Mick Jagger. Brent Waters, you're my Jay-Z. And Dan Wallach, I don't know if you're here today. Dan, you know, your video, where you're talking about me. Well, all I can say is, okay, you're going to be my Ozzy Osbourne. And Greg Miller, if any of you know Greg Miller. Greg, you're going to be my Prince, my Jack White. I just can't thank you enough for the work that you are doing for me and I hope are going to do for the future. But I was thinking about what I could offer you today other than standing up here and being a bullseye. But besides that, my first thought was, well, what you want from me is, of course, you wanted to hear my comments on whether or not the Python programming language running inside the Cherry Pie 3.2.0 application server with a Lighty web server provided sufficient structure and a robust enough environment to scale up to run a medium-sized internet election in my county. That's what you want, right? Okay, well, maybe not that. Instead, what I'm going to try to do today is focus on giving you my perspective as to why I hope we can change the dysfunctional structure of the relationships in the election world, especially in the vendor world, the world of our equipment and how we test it and how we use it, and to talk about how much this country needs your wisdom and your knowledge of science, especially now. And as example of this, I wanted to tell you where Travis County is on their purchase of a new voting system and how I need your input. And finally, I'd like to tell you briefly about a new project that we're trying to put together that may be of interest to you. In fact, I've got so much information that I want to share with you about what's going on lately that I hope you'll forgive me if I talk a little fast, and those of you who know that I talk fast. Okay, so I'm the elected county clerk. And I do provide election services voluntarily. I'm not an elections administrator, but I voluntarily provide election services for 130 local entities, including the city of Austin. They're all my clients. Austin is the capital of Texas, and I am extremely fortunate to have been elected 5 times, and I've had the privilege of serving the great citizens of Travis County in this job since 1987. I think it's an honor to be in public service, and I really do try to never forget that this immense obligation is something not to be taken for granted. The first election I conducted was way back when dinosaurs and cavemen roamed together on the earth. Okay, now that's an inside joke in case you follow the Texas textbook. Okay, so I've administered elections with paper, punch card, optical scan, and electronic voting, electronic ballots. Currently, we have 575, give or take, registered voters and 210 precincts. That's all about to change because we've just been through drastic redistricting. We have an extensive early voting program, and if our request is approved by the Texas Secretary of State, we're about to have a vote center system where we are going to maintain virtually all of the number of our polling places, but allow anyone to vote in any of our locations throughout the county come election day. In 2002, we purchased a brand new voting system because my existing ES&S optical scan voting system with a central count had come to the end of its life. We had been using it for 12 years. And with the help of a citizens committee, I made the decision to purchase the Hart InterCivic eSlate system. And it is what we use today. HAVA implementation occurred shortly after that. I was about a year to 18 months ahead of the market. And we were fortunate to still be able to get HAVA funding to apply back towards this purchase. And since we started using it, the Hart system has successfully performed 33 elections. Okay, now, 10 years have gone by, 10 years, and our current system, Hart InterCivic, is now getting near the end of its life. So I'm now in the middle of a careful and deliberate process to select its replacement. I knew I wanted to have a system that had a paper element. This is what my community wants. And when I went to find what was new on the market, I was shocked to discover that it looked the same as it had looked back in the old optical scan days almost 20 years ago, back from in the early 90s. Well, it just looked like it had a fresh coat of paint. 10 years ago, when we were looking at moving to electronic voting, the discussions back then largely centered on issues like how would voters adapt and what kind of training and logistics would be needed for the election workers and how are we going to make sure every polling place is up and running at 7 a.m. The thoughts of software attackers, computer viruses, and the world of advanced cryptology seemed more like science fiction than a relevant topic in my world. So you'd think that as I got ready to go into this next process for the third time, that the terrain I would find would be drastically different, and that the lessons we had learned would mean that we would be so much smarter and that we would handle this so much better this time around. Unfortunately, I would argue that in many respects, that is not the case. That is not what we face today. Today, what we face are issues very similar to the ones we had back in 2000. Now, thank goodness we're not talking about hanging chads or pregnant chads or a little bit pregnant chads or any of that kind of stuff. But are we not, again, talking about the need to fundamentally change the way we vote because there are issues as to whether or not our current systems can be trusted? 10 years, and what's changed? I'd like to share my flashback with you to the 2000s. And have we decided what we're going to call that first decade? Is it going to be the aughts? Is that, I kind of like the aughts, but then I'm, you know, a county clerk and I like digging around in attics. So there's some unpleasantness here. And some of these may sound a little oversimplified, but bear with me, it's my flashback. And it is from an EA's perspective. So here we go. Here's some thoughts on this. Back in the aughts, election administrators were in fact the main source for developing safety protocols for electronic voting systems, not because we were qualified to do so, And even though they had not, we had not participated in the design of the voting systems or the certification of them, and we had little or no say in the requirements that had then been used for their certification. We turned to physical security methods, testing procedures and auditing procedures, both pre and post. And we had no effective mechanism for demanding software improvements for standards, although by about 2007, at least we had VVSG, which was very late in the game. And once again, it was all done post-certification. EAs had minimal assistance from vendors who were getting product improvements, and few options, since only a handful of vendors serve all of the election entities in the United States. Vendors told us, and they told the public, trust me. And at the same time, they were withholding their software code as proprietary. We saw few, if any, upgrades to voting systems because even the smallest change to solve a problem meant an exhaustive and costly recertification process. EAs had to hunt down and sort through and analyze a myriad of information, from anecdotal information to actual good research that appeared from widely scattered sources. It wasn't well organized. Academic papers and internet rumors were often given equal weight in the public discourse. No relevant information seemed to get a formal review to determine accuracy and applicability by the certification authorities who, under a screen of confidentiality, reviewed software and certified the systems. As a result, all of the accusations and criticisms against election systems, whether valid or invented, continued to stand uncontested by any independent authority. It was all mushed together as the same thing. EAs like me were vilified by electronic voting critics who made broad and sweeping statements that condemned all electronic voting systems and the people who administered them. We often ended up working alone to try to find ways to make voting safer and to try to answer questions from voters, because the vendors and the certifying agencies and academicians and other critics spent most of their time either attacking or defending electronic voting without any advice to those of us who are in the field about providing intermediate practical analyses and solutions. Now, I know this is oversimplified and it's a bit ancient history, and I'm not trying to say that elections administrators should be pitied or that we are not culpable in this whole mess. And I know that you have a similar list of issues, legitimate issues, and felt a lot of frustration, especially towards my colleagues, folks like me. Through no fault of your own, you did not have the opportunity to sufficiently contribute your comments until far too late in the process, after the certifications were completed and the systems were purchased and delivered. Way too late to really make a difference. For you, I imagined it felt like we would say in Texas, like hollering down a well, while EAs and vendors and regulatory agencies just stood there and looked at you blankly while you explained what seemed so obvious to you. I can also appreciate the dilemma faced by vendors, at least a little bit. They felt hamstrung by the certification process, and they found themselves stuck in a now low-profit business riddled by endless red tape, where new standards were passed after the equipment had been certified and sold, and they became an easier target and the scapegoat of anybody who wanted to criticize the process that they were then bound up in. And community activists felt worn out, their concerns seemingly brushed aside under a carpet of secrecy, and they were left wondering whether this democracy that boasts of being a government of the people could actually be trusted to count people's votes. And as an election administrator, I know that we were not perfect. In face of accusations that we were all false actors, some of us became very defensive And perhaps we could have done more sooner, but we would have had to create an entire new paradigm in our world to make these changes. And at the time, we didn't know what that would look like. All right. The point I'm trying to make here is that no one group is to blame. Rather, the roles that we were all placed in, that we were all trying to play, were all out of sync. And the whole system was flawed from the start. We were all kind of thrown into it. So let's start fresh from there. What are the proper roles that we can all play for the future? Okay, well, here's an abbreviated list, and David Wagner has given me a lot of help in trying to think through what roles we could play, especially for you and I. Here's an abbreviated list of some of the suggestions, and you'll find some of these thoughts in a paper I did previously called Doing Things Differently. Okay, how about if I start with the role of elections administrators? I think our first and foremost job is to take care of voters and be competent in running the election. That's the best way we can make sure that our communities can trust the elections process. We should be actively working with academicians and the certifying agencies to develop requirements that tell the vendors how to build the equipment, tells them what we need to deliver on the ground. We should consider elections academicians one of our very best resources, encouraging the opportunities for researchers to have access to the whole elections process in real life situations. Now, what should the role of the vendors be? Well, they ought to be soliciting input from all of the parties, all of us, you and me, during the very early stages of any research and development, really early on. I don't think that's happened. And they should be proving in a public setting that their systems have high levels of security and performance, that their data coding is a nice, beautiful piece of work. Wouldn't it be great if it was elegantly written? And perhaps even offering open peer reviews. And finally, without any doubt, they should be establishing a high code of ethical standards that includes the promise that the corporation and its top executives will not make political contributions to individuals or political action committees. Now, meanwhile, the role for academicians and computer security experts, I suggest that we ought to be improving communications and working relationships just like this, with improving our communications with vendors, with certifying agencies, and with the monitoring agencies like the EAC, perhaps by having open peer, and if that's not a workable situation, then certainly a review and relationships early on in software development. By encouraging the idea among your community that the finding of a problem also comes with the obligation to help find a solution, and working in close relationships with election administrators to identify those problems and solutions. We need your help. Working with elections administrators, organizations to offer sessions that bring new and varied points of view and at our conferences teach us the basic technical aspects of computer security. If I had not had Ivan Millman, I would have not known the first thing about how to handle election computer security. I got lucky with IEEE. They taught me what little I know today. Now, how about the certifying agencies, EAC? Well, they need to be providing a central reporting and monitoring research division that investigates and serves as a clearinghouse. Now, they've got the clearinghouse part down. Investigation, not so much. And it should be for anecdotal information as well as reported events. It's a big step. Taking an active role in providing assistance to election administrators regarding the latest recommendations for detecting problems and mitigating risks. They should be busting apart and rebuilding that certification process so that it can work effectively without being something that is sluggish and expensive and prevents new ideas and software improvements from being regularly introduced. The incentives are in the wrong place, in my opinion. And they need to be setting aside time and resources to fully consider new ideas like open source software. Absolutely, the EAC should not be disbanded. Flawed and fledgling, yes, they are, but they are the only conduit for us and for local voices to be heard at the federal level. Now, I know this is not pie-in-the-sky thinking. Shoot, y'all invited me to be a part of your conference here. So, yes, we can take on more productive roles, all of us. In fact, I think that's what y'all have done today, and I give you credit for what you have done. Okay, now, at home in my community wants me to do something completely different. The study group that I helped form that's going to help me pick our next voting system, our third, had a couple of primary points that they wanted me to look for in a voting system. One, they wanted a voting system that had a paper element. That's what they want, and that's what I'm going to give them. And they wanted it with a machine-marked ballot. That is electronically counted. And second, they didn't like any of the systems that they saw on the market when they reviewed everything. So they asked me to go out and get something that they liked. Now, their attitude was, ignore the obstacles, screw the rules, go get something better. Push those vendors. Well, did I mention how proud I am to be from Austin, Texas? I'm an Austinite, and our statues of our downtown don't have a bunch of presidents. We have statues of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Willie Nelson. And we don't brag about having some fancy theme park. Instead, we've got the Ann Richards Bridge that is the home of 1.5 million bats. It's the largest bat colony in North America. And you can line up on the bridge and watch them fly in the summertime. Black ribbons that are absolutely mysterious and beautiful. And we're an odd mix of dreamers and realists. And if the establishment says it can't be done, well, you can bet that that's the one thing we're going to be hell-bent to go do. So, this leads me to my second part of my presentation to you. So what I'd like to do is give you the very first draft of what I think is a picture of what my community has described to me that they want in a voting system. And I realize it's low-tech, but I really wanted to give you a picture that you could hold in your hand, go into discussion groups and talk about, and Gail and Michelle can help give you another copy if you don't already have one. If you'll raise your hand, they'll pass around more to you. Now, I'm starting from this vantage point. I am not looking at anything that is already certified. Or what fits maybe even into current Texas law. We'll change the law if we have to. I'm not looking at what's already sitting on some vendor's shelf. My strategy may not work, but this is what I'm going to try because this is what we need and want, and what I'm looking for is ways to make it better. Okay, now, before I begin talking about it, two quick things. One, we are ever mindful that security is still going to be a relevant issue once we move to a paper system. Security doesn't go out the door just because paper comes in. And we will continue to need real-world solutions and security protocols that are based on probability analysis, not possibilities and not absolutes. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. In our study group, we heard extensively a prepared presentation from activists who said that no counting method using computers is acceptable. I don't think they even wanted calculators because it can never be transparent. No possibility. They condemned the use of precinct ballot counters because, and they showed footage of academicians supporting their claims. And they said that the only answer that would ever be tolerated was if paper ballots were hand counted in every precinct polling place. Well, that overlooks the reality that we all have to live in a real world democracy. All right, two, and perhaps more importantly, in case you were thinking to yourself, why should I be spending my time thinking about, you know, working on, giving consideration to a voting system in one little old bitty county way down south in the middle of Texas? Well, the answer I would give you is timing. Like 10 years ago, we're about a year ahead of the market. We purchased our system just prior to HAVA implementation because we had to. My ESNS optical scan system was breaking down. Our replacement schedule is once again hitting now because I'm about 10 years through it. And we're going to see, about a year from now, a huge wave of all of our entities throughout the whole United States buying new voting systems with many of the problems that we had 10 years ago, which to me is kind of demoralizing. Nevertheless, this is what we're going to be faced with. So, may I suggest to you that now is the time when you could put your mark on the future. And you can use Travis County as a way to make that mark. And you could go back and make comment on this issue with the idea that it could apply to a whole bunch of entities that are going to be coming forward into the future. So for my part, I throw this first draft out at you, and I am eager for you to tell me how you could make it better. So help me broaden my vision. I want to not only figure out what I should be asking for, but maybe more importantly, tell me how I should ask you for what it is I need so that I can get the best designed, most voter-friendly, most accurate, and most secure voting system possible. You all know how much I care about electronic voting security by now. I have not changed my mind. Our draft design is, at its heart, a system that utilizes machine-marked ballots for reasons that you're going to hear about later in this program. Machine-marked ballots that are scanned and tabulated by a precinct ballot counter that will not reject the ballot because the voters already resolved it. This is because we want a paper element, but I don't want to have to deal with any voter intent issues having somebody else interpret how another voter marked a ballot. And additionally, I feel really strongly that everyone has the right to vote on a single system. A person with disabilities should not have to be sent off to a corner to vote on a different voting system than everybody else. We all should vote the same way. Also, just so that you know that this is our approach too, we have early voting and we have vote centers in our future. So the idea of a manual ballot allocation is something we cannot kill enough trees to make that work. Paper ballot allocations are not going to be in our future from a stored inventory. Hence, perhaps the ballot on demand, we're going to be looking at something like that. Okay, so let me give you a brief overview of what I have in mind, and it will follow the diagram that you now have in your hand. And I have taken the good parts of a lot of different voting systems and combined them, and I have put in a couple of ideas of our own. And so here's how it goes. Quickly, we're going to run through this. Imagine a voting system where the voter begins at the voter qualification station. The judge locates the voter on a computerized voter registration list and records that a ballot is being cast, and this information is transmitted back in real time to the voting office. Numbers are monitored by the election staff throughout the day, and why not update them and give information regarding lines and waiting times regularly and report them on a website throughout the day so that you can tell about precinct reporting times and give that information to the public. One label and one receipt are printed for the voter so that you can put that label on a manual sign-up sheet for them to sign in for. You still have wet ink. The voter signs the label and then it becomes a part of the poll list. The receipt, which has a number or a barcode, is a piece that is then given to the voter to take to the next station, which is their voting booth. They use that number, code, whatever is best, to open up their particular ballot format at their voting station. All right. When they're at their voting station and after they've entered their code on the electronic tablet, and I want them to use an electronic tablet, this is what pulls up their correct ballot format. And this particular part needs to be able to handle very complex split precincts and all kinds of joint elections, very complicated. The image on the screen is intuitive. It should need little or no instruction for use. The graphics on the screen are well designed for maximum readability. The voter navigates through the ballot and easily zooms in and zooms out. A bar on the right-hand side, or somewhere convenient, continuously shows the voter the full list of choices as they're being made. And then at the end, a full screen summary appears showing what the voters chosen as they cast their ballot. And a list at the end of the voter's choices prints out on a printer that's next to the voter's e-tablet. This print list only includes the race headings and the voter's choices and a number associated with each one of those choices. The ballot is easy for the voter to read, does not contain any symbols or coding that the voter does not understand, and it does not necessarily resemble a traditional ballot and minimizes the use of paper. It could even be a strip of paper. This part of the system does not record any votes. We're not to that point yet. And it stands alone with no connections either to the voter registration system or to the precinct ballot counter, which is going to be next. These are off-the-shelf tablets, potentially, and certainly printers that are easily upgradable and replaceable, very durable, and competitively priced. The printers are reasonably priced and designed for high volume use and use paper that can be easily replenished and identified as official ballot paper. The print is clear, bright, easy to read, and stable enough to maintain a high quality for the 22-month federal retention period. The voter takes the ballot as the next step over to the precinct ballot counter. Now, the voter has already resolved their own ballot, so the precinct ballot counter doesn't have to have a system by which it rejects the voter's ballot to go through resolution. It's already been done. This standard piece of equipment contains a scanner, a tabulating unit, two memory card containers, and a ballot box to hold the paper ballot. This system seamlessly handles provisional ballots, limited ballots whenever necessary, and anything else that might come up in the future that requires a specialized voting ballot. The voter feeds the ballot into the scanner and then takes an image, the scanner then takes an image of the ballot, records the vote, and drops the paper ballot into a secured ballot box. The voter sees a message on the small screen stating that the vote was received, and then the voter leaves with a smile on their face. The voter's thoughts are not about voting security. Her thoughts are about how happy she is that she took a few minutes out of her day to participate in her country's democratic process. Now, when a curbside voter arrives at the polling location, the voting station, predictably, is easily carried to the car by a poll worker for curbside voting. The ballot that is voted curbside is confirmed by the curbside voter and submitted to the precinct ballot counter with no loss of the voter's privacy. The scanner is compact, geared for high volume, and is not prone to calibration issues. Even after a rough ride in a delivery vehicle, or perhaps a little rain going between the inside and the car, and is easily replaceable with off-the-shelf equipment. All right, back to the precinct ballot counter. It stores the vote count and the ballot images on an internal drive as well as two memory cards. Two connector cords are attached to the tabulator system and are enclosed within the unit so that they cannot be detached in the field without detection. The opposite ends of the connector cord are connected to memory cards. Each memory card is stored in a sturdy plastic container designed to prevent tampering. And during initial central office election preparation, a secure connection with the memory card and the system connector can be made. After the box is locked down, however, a break in that connection causes the memory container and the card to fall down inside the box, making it inaccessible and unusable until the sealed container is opened. And take a look at your diagram, and you can see that, rendering it unusable until we figure out what happened. Each container is sealed and secured with a seal and a special lock containing a time stamp chip. When this lock is opened, the time is recorded. Both containers also have a GPS chip. While the polls are open, the containers fit inside the precinct ballot counter and out of reach of voters or potential troublemakers. The memory cards are set for read only after the polls are closed, and after one use, they're either discarded or recycled for non-election use, whatever we think is best. When the polls close, the judges use a seal and time stamp lock to secure the top of the ballot box, which also has a GPS chip in it. All right, then the judge opens one of the memory card containers at the precinct. The memory card is removed, connected to the computer over at the voter qualification station, and that information from that box is then sent immediately back to the central office. So immediate verification before anything is moved. When the central office receives this information, an election worker compares the number of votes that were processed on that machine with the number of voters that came through the qualification system all day long, compare the two, and do a verification at that point. That information is then transferred to the receiving substation where the information is gonna go soon, so that the receiving substation knows what to expect and so that the election workers can ensure that the judge has adequate documentation when they show up so that they can support any differences, make any explanations before they go home. The judge replaces the card then, when they're finished with that step, back into the container, locks it, seals it, and returns it back into the precinct ballot counter. So we've got a situation where we've got one set of results that's locked into the precinct ballot counter, and the other one is going to be given at the receiving substation to law enforcement for transport down to Central Station, so we have them going in different directions. I like that. The judge secures the remaining equipment that is lightweight enough for your average 70-year-old person to disassemble and maneuver, rolling this secured precinct ballot counter systems with lock seals and a GPS to the car, put it into the car, and transport it to the receiving substation. Okay, now, once we get to the substation, an election worker checks all of those items in, counts the number of signatures on the paper poll list, and makes certain documentation regarding differences in numbers, if any, so that they turn it all of that information in, all of that documentation in before the judge leaves to go home. The second memory card container is removed from the precinct ballot counter, as I mentioned, and given to law enforcement for delivery. And this is an official surrender given to law enforcement for delivery to the central counting station. And that's where it's going to go be tabulated for unofficial election results for election night. The paper ballot box and its container with the memory card are safely stored at the substation for possession by the election authority. All right, later on that night, those will all be taken in, put in a separate storage facility that is usually managed by another elected official as well, so there's two custodians. All right, the central office knows the location of each of the precinct's memory card containers and the paper ballot box because they've been lowjacked with an inexpensive GPS system. The whereabouts of these important items can be tracked from the time they are initially picked up by the judge the day before the election or whatever, to the time the memory cards complete the loop all the way back to the central counting station. If it becomes necessary for a sheriff to be sent out because we've got a problem, you can give the sheriff exact locations of where that piece of equipment is. Okay, election night, back at Central Counting Station. The cards are tabulated at the Central Counting Station and the returns are compared to those that were received at the polling place when they were first sent from when the polls closed. And when they match, the returns are downloaded and read into a read-only CD and then transferred to another computer that is not connected to any system, that is standard state law in a lot of places, and published to the internet along with early voting and ballot by mail results that are also a part of this same system. This is the normal election night reporting system that you are accustomed to. Okay. All right, after election day, but before the canvass, I think it's a good idea to do a sample number of precincts, if not the whole thing, to run an independent auditing system. The system is not connected to the voting tabulation system. It scans and tallies the paper ballots using the numbers that were associated with the names and not the names themselves. And then that number is compared to the electronic number. So there's your after post-election audit compared to the paper and electronic comparison. After late mail ballots are received and the final official election returns are prepared, the images of the ballot, how about this, are made available and viewable on the internet. I would recommend no hired third-party auditors are necessary. Anyone can view and recount the ballots on the internet at their leisure. Let's give our voters what they're asking for. Let them see the ballots. It might require a change in law. Let's give them what they're asking for. I tend to not think that the idea of independent third-party auditors after the fact has a lot of weight to it because I have been at the mercy of an auditor who has their own agenda. There is nobody pure enough when it comes to election results that there can be that level of trustworthiness. I would recommend that that's not the direction we need to go. All right, finally, the software through these components of these systems is easy, should be, for administrators to use without vendor involvement. The software should be well-designed, flexible, able to handle a multitude of voting scenarios, and able to recognize and handle provisional ballots, and places great emphasis on not only security, but redundancy. The source code must be open, or at the very least, reviewable by independent experts not directly associated with the vendor or the certification process. On the polling place section of the diagram, you'll also see something that says ADA innovations. I've highlighted this because I want our voters with disabilities to vote on the same basic voting system that everybody else votes on. But that doesn't mean that we should ignore all the cool and cutting edge stuff that's coming out of the ADA community. The latest conversations about all of that stuff show that there's lots of really great things that both able and able-bodied people can take advantage of. The latest conversations on sustainability also show that we are headed in the right direction if we want to do something about costs and containability, if we operate one system rather than having two or hybrids or any of the systems that we're in today that were done answering to the cheapness of purchasing a system. And we have a system, a situation over the next 10 or 20 years where our older population of adults is on the rise, and we have another population to be thinking about. We have more than 200,000 soldiers with traumatic brain injuries returning from fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. I know people are working on innovations to help with them. So why do our election systems on the market today have the same things that they had in the year 2000? We need to be thinking about those folks. And what about computer controls that are guided by eye or eyebrow movements? And what about text-to-speech wands? And what about screens that fit over electronic tablets or paper ballots that deliver to their users the things that they need to convert Braille to sound? I'm not sure what we want here. I just know that we need something better, and we need to keep up with the innovation. We must also be mindful, I think, that in the future we got a situation brewing where we're going to be dealing with a split in the population of voters. On the one hand, I think we're going to be dealing with some who will demand a paper ballot and a traditional polling place. And on the other hand, we're going to have the rest of the voters, having grown up with iPads and iPhones and computers in their classrooms, and they're going to roll their eyes at us, and they're going to say, and they're going to demand that they should be able to vote on the internet or even on their personal devices, and they're going to look at us and they're going to say, "Dad, Mom, you are such dinosaurs. Why are we voting, you know, this old-fashioned way? Of all people, y'all were smart enough to have figured this out a long time ago." I'm afraid that's what they're going to be saying to us. And what are we going to do about this split? Are we going to make both camps happy? I think that's probably the dilemma that we are going to have to face. All right. There's one more thing that I want to tell you about that's a project that I'm working on that's along the same lines of the kind of relationship that I would like to have with you. And I want to tell you about this project that I'm working on with open source software. Even if the idea doesn't get used in its purest form in the larger voting equipment arena, I think it has other uses and other places. So I've struggled to visualize how this idea could be tested in our unforgiving and inflexible election world. One mistake and you're down for the count. So enter Greg Miller and OSDV. They responded to an RFP that I let out for an elections night reporting software package for unofficial results. Something, once again, I remind you, that is not connected to voting tabulation by law. They presented a proposal that gives us an opportunity to have a product that meets all the requirements of our RFP, and in a way to try this concept in a low-risk situation. The problem was that our budget was a whole lot less than what was going to be needed to pay for this project. So I'm going to put on a full tilt effort with OSDV to see if we can fund the difference to work on this project. And you will not be finding me going out inviting you to try to hack into this system. In fact, I actually think that'll be counterproductive. Because what I really want you to do is work with me to see if there's any problem with it, if there's anything wrong with it, if there's any way I can make it better. Because what I want this to do is to succeed. I want you to properly analyze the concept, because if it does work, then there's the possibility of using an open source election night reporting software publicly owned in the public domain that then can turn around and be used on basic equipment that we can give, that's according to Texas law, to every county in the state of Texas pretty much for free. Now we've begun that first step at attacking some of the problems of expensive hardware, expensive software, and that tie and a break from this dysfunctional vendor environment that we find ourselves in. So cross your fingers that I can get sufficient funding and that we can give this a try and let you all see it and criticize on it. Okay, this has been a little bit dry for first thing on a Monday morning, but you're the people that I really need to get this message to. And you're who I hope will listen to me. You're the bright spots in my job, believe it or not, and I'm serious about wanting your comments. Now, I've included a sheet with my contact information on it, so I'm serious when I say I want your thoughts and ideas. They're important, and they will be of great interest to me, so email me. Come down to Austin and see me. We'll have lunch together down on 6th Street. Call me. We'll go to lunch. We'll talk about this. And perhaps in an environment where it's less contentious, your brilliant minds can be put to work on some of these real life issues that we face, and we can walk together in a little more inventive environment and stop some of the disincentives that we've all had to face. I thank you very much, and I hope I've not run long, for just the kindness and the willingness that you've shown by inviting me here today. And as you start your conference, I know that you know how much I and many of my colleagues appreciate how much your reasoning skills are needed and how much you are wanted right now. Your contributions are more essential than they have ever been before. So with that, welcome to the 2011 Electronic Voting Technology Workshop and the workshop on trustworthy elections. May the workshops begin. Thank you. It's my honor to take questions. And Dan, are you my first?
Yeah, Ozzy Osbourne, Rice University. So I suppose I should express some concern about whether we're going off the rails on a crazy train.
Okay.
Going off the rails on a crazy train. My concern is, I've been involved in Texas politics for long enough now to know that change in Austin doesn't happen easily, and the legislative process can be challenging, and the regulatory regime that surrounds voting can be Byzantine.
Yes.
How are you going to pull this off?
Because I might not.
I mean, in all seriousness, you know, there are certification and testing requirements. There's the Texas panel that's supposed to certify machines, and you're kind of saying, forget all of that, we're going to do something better. And that's a great idea, but how are you going to make this actually legal?
Right. Well, obviously I've thought about that. and thanks for giving me the opportunity to answer it, because it is the number one question. How are we going to make this happen? My first, obvious one is, I took every already certified idea, package that's already out there, and included it in this diagram. So I think what we're looking at, for the most part, is integration. So I think that gets us a long way down the road. I also am relying on some goodwill. The EAC has gone through a lot of repair and rework of their certification process. So while I still think it's a long process, it's shorter than it used to be, and it goes a lot quicker, and I think it will go a lot quicker by using what has already been certified. So our thought is, with precinct ballot counters, use what's already there. Pick the very best one that we've got. Use it. Integrate as much as possible what has already been tried and tested. We are not truly trying to reinvent the wheel. The extra pieces, like the plastic container with the memory card that falls down inside the box and becomes inaccessible, is not so much a software thing that a security person would want. It's once again that kind of EA physical security that we think of. I think that's less of an impediment to certification than some other things. I think what we're really looking at in terms of certification is a time process rather than some of the specific issues that security experts might really take issue with. We will see. In Texas, once again, it's the same way. We are operating on a lot of what's already been certified, what already has goodwill, what has already been shown to work, and to the extent possible that we can make changes to this to follow along the same lines, that's what we want to do. So, and we'll do our best. Everything that's here, I may have to go ahead. The heart system that we have right now may have to operate a little while longer while I'm waiting for this work to be done. I may have to get provisional certification as a pilot. There are those options that are available to Travis County. I don't know. Like I said, I'm going to try because I'm a little tired of not having what I need and then being criticized for the what I have not being what we need. Yes, sir. Josh, was it?
Yes, thank you. First of all, thank you so very much. You very clearly put a tremendous amount of very careful thought into good design, and there are many great ideas, and I'm delighted to see them. I think there are some other methods that might provide even greater assurance with maybe even greater ease, and I'd love to talk to you about them offline a little bit, maybe later if you have some time, but I want to pick on one small thing that I think is a concern the way you suggested it, and that's posting full ballots online. The problem is that can lead to pattern voting attacks, coercion and vote selling, where voters are able to sell their votes or be coerced by providing the vote at the top of the ticket according to what they've been told to do, and then at the bottom of the ticket vote in certain ways, maybe even write-ins, to show that, yes, this is my unique ballot, and it did have the correct votes on top. And I wonder if you've thought about the concerns there.
I did, and I'm not entirely certain that we can get to the point where we can put it on the website. But the idea was to make it completely after Canvas, later on in the process, and I can be talked out of that piece of it.
Okay.
We'll see.
Thank you.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Joe Hall, UC Berkeley, Princeton. I want to reiterate how refreshing it is to have, you know, I love to play in the role of election administrator. I'm not, but I like to work with election administrators and LEOs. And this is just fascinating to see someone come with such a you might think it's half-baked, but it's probably three-fourths baked, you know.
Okay.
It's designed for a system that we can critique. One quick clarification, the email address is listed as Travis Space County Space Elections. That's probably not going to work.
It should be ..
No, I think it's Travis County Elections, one word.
One word. Cool.
Thank you. My typo. Thank you.
Hi, Dana. Pam Smith from Verified Voting. You were concerned that this might be a little bit dry, and I'd like to disabuse you of that notion and say that this is the butter on our bread. I'm so delighted that you came here and that folks like Hovav had the good sense to bring you here because it's really refreshing and wonderful. And I think also a testament to hard work of folks from all sides, different stakeholders, trying to come together, because we really do all have the same thing at heart, which is that our elections work. So I really want to thank you for that. I want to add just one thought that you might consider as you go forward, and that is that you might consider having risk-limiting audits, particularly at the ballot level, which will be enabled by your clever system design, because if you have the ballot images, it'll become really much easier to do ballot-level auditing. It's much less work for a really high degree of confidence that you can demonstrate in the outcome. So I'd be happy to talk to you about that.
Love that.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ana Maria Quevedo.
Hi.
Former employee of several EVT vendors, including ESNS, Premier Election Solutions, and Sequoia Voting Systems. Currently a undergraduate student conducting research in EVT. I want to thank you for your presentation. It's been great that you share your vision for future voting systems. I do have a question. Can you describe the anatomy of the ballot you're planning to use for mailing absentees and the system that you envision can count those ballots? Thank you.
Yes, we did gloss over the by-mail system, and it's because that's almost a whole nother speech in itself, so, and we just didn't have time to cover that. But the way I see it is, it is a much more traditional full ballot that you would, let's leave aside internet or email options for now, okay? Because we may not be able to do voting with this internet. Perhaps another one another time. That's another story and another speech at another time. So I am assuming that, let's talk traditionally, it'll be a full ballot that you would then mail off, potentially email off to locally, overseas, whatever, marked and then sent back, and then we would run it through typically what most large jurisdictions have right now, which is a digital scan and then a resolution process. So more like that is what we're thinking. Does that give you an idea? Thank you.
Good morning. Jeremy Epstein, SRI International and elections official in Fairfax County, Virginia.
Hi.
Elections official in Virginia means that I'm a poll worker. It doesn't mean I'm
as smart
as you.
You're my hero.
Well, many of us in this room are also poll workers. Yeah. I think we recognize the importance of what you do and try to help as we can. My question is, in doing the survey that you did of what's out there commercially that you could buy that was ineffective, because I'm like the design you came up with, and I was wondering, did you look at open source solutions like Elections by the People has an open source solution that's pretty similar to what you've described here, and they actually demonstrated it at this conference. I can't remember if it was a year ago or 2 years ago.
I have. There were, and I don't mean to criticize individual vendors from this, because then it sounds like I'm beating up on one guy, and I'm really not. Where we ran into problems was if you have an early voting program, or if you use vote centers, then you cannot have paper inventory to hand out a pre-printed ballot. Mm-hmm. You have to have some way to generate ballot on demand. All right. With ballot on demand, you know, if you're going to go ahead and pre-print the entire ballot, then you start looking at options of, okay, well, are you going to just pre-print the whole ballot with all the lines and all the names and all the markers and all the little chain on the side and all that stuff, just as if you were going to be at a regular printer, run the risk that might not meet tolerances, you know, or you might have jams and then you have, you know, people backing up. Or are you going to skip that part and offer an electronic ballot with some criticisms about, you know, well, you're just back to whatever you were doing before and then print out? Or are you going to have some other kind of version where you have an electronic face that prints out the ballot after the fact? And then again, are you going to have some kind of a pre-printed mask where then it prints just the selections, right? Or are you going to forget all of that and only have the electronic mask, and then you just print more like a receipt that just had the voters' choices? When you came down to looking at those kinds of options, none of the companies were with me on that kind of choice. So I'm looking for something that doesn't, that is paper, but not quite so paper intensive that you run into tolerance issues and backup issues and all of that. That's kind of, I'm looking for a better ballot on demand.
Luther Weeks, Connecticut Voters Count, also an election poll worker.
Hi, Luther.
You know, I think that one thing, if you're talking about publishing ballots or making it available for people to audit, and whether you
or
have
look
an
at.
Independent audit or some other kind of audit, there needs to be a step where the public can verify that images match the paper. It isn't, and I would say that to generalize that, to have transparency a consideration in the whole process, whether it's programming memory cards or surveillance of equipment and whatever else, that's got to be a consideration as well.
Thank you. I made maybe an assumption that y'all all know that we open our doors and we have security cameras that make video available streaming on our website, that we invite the public in to watch, that we have, I mean, that we do a lot of all of that, and that the reconciliation between the paper ballots and the electronic ballots at the end was a new piece, and I apologize if I ran over that a little too quickly. And I'm interested in more of that because I really do think that's a big part of public confidence.
Right.
That's the whole reason.
It needs to be in the model because there's places where that sort of thing isn't done.
Sorry if that wasn't clear. I think you're right.
Eva Waskow. I'm from San Rafael and been involved in election reform since 1985. And thank you so much for that overview. That was very, very comprehensive, starting from 2000 moving forward. One thing I would like, which follows up a little bit on what the previous speaker said, is to include in your model, since we're talking about trustworthy elections, robust observer access by well-informed observers throughout the entire process. We had a top-to-bottom review here in California, as you know, and some of the authors are sitting in the audience.
Yes.
And one of the mitigations, since the systems were so fundamentally flawed, they had to, you had to start from scratch. One of the mitigations was to require all of the local election officials to put out election observer panel plans. Well, if you go to the website, you'll see that a lot of them aren't there. And many of them are drawn up not only by the election officials, but the one example I'd point to is Alameda County, where the election officials' observer plan is 2 pages. The one that a citizen drew up, Michelle Gabriel, is 51 pages, which is complete, and I suggest everyone look at that. So I'm somewhere in this, including the transparency and election observer access throughout the whole process to guarantee the integrity, which is, you're talking about trustworthy elections. I think that would go a long way. So just throw that into the formula, and you're probably thinking of it at some point. And thank you very much.
You're welcome, and I agree with you. More work needs to be done making sure that election poll watchers are fully educated and trained and know what to do in all of those situations and are welcomed into the process.
It's not just the poll workers. It's the canvas. No. It's the canvas process. The election audit.
Everything.
It's all critical parts of the election to be observable.
I agree. Thank you. Sir? We're done.
Yeah, I think the conference, I think, is fantastic. But the next session is scheduled to start at 10:20, which is about 3 minutes. If anybody is under caffeinated, I thought
oops, you ran over.
A few minutes to rush back there before we start the next session. But I hope that Dana will be able to stay around a little bit longer.
Thank you.